So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
I both found the stump and the girl just can't get enough.
Way you can hear the music there. Very special guest on this week's edition of Review Away. Hello, everyone. I am John Pollock, and I'm joined as always
by Wei Ting. What was that track? What was the name of it?
Buff Daddy.
That's what I was going to pick to go out.
Oh, well, that's what I was picking to come in. We should really communicate
this
more.
This is awkward.
Well, we can maybe come up with something a little bit later on.
That's fine.
But the tunes of Buff Bagwell are indeed accurate, everybody. Buff Bagwell will be joining the show later on in the hour. I had a chance to chat with Marcus earlier this week, discussing many things, including the invasion angle and this particular edition of Raw. And I'm looking forward to this interview coming up later on, Wei. But
me too.
You made quite a good choice last week, I found. You were able to go online and find this. The July 2nd, 2001 edition of Raw is War, back when it was allowed to be war, from Tacoma, Washington, Way. And just quickly, for fans that maybe have only come along in the last couple of years, this is one of those Raws that is synonymous. When you say the Tacoma Raw, everybody knows what you're talking about.
Tacoma Dome. That's it. That's all you have to say.
That's it. And this night would prove to be pivotal for the WWE, especially in 2001. This was a very, very important night. For all the wrong reasons.
And the further death of WCW.
Yeah, this was really sad. But let's get into it, everybody. Monday, July the 2nd, 2001. Do you remember where you were away for this? I assume I was at O'Grady's.
I was at home, probably.
All right. The video opens up promoting the Invasion pay-per-view, and it's going back and forth between Vince and Linda McMahon, who are basically representing the WWF and, I guess, Linda WCW at this point. Along with Shane McMahon. Your commentators for tonight's event, Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, who I continued to enjoy this tandem together, and just continue to hate the current set of commentary we get in the WWE.
Yeah, I mean, trying to think back, I guess there was Jonathan Coachman, but when was the last time we really... Oh, and JBL, of course. But when was the last time we really had a really good heel commentator on Raw?
JBL was so good on SmackDown. Yeah, he became my favorite part of that show.
Yeah, I remember them. I loved Heyman so much, and then once they took Heyman away and brought King back, they didn't have that heel face.
Didn't have the edge because he came back as a baby face, and it was just this kind of retread I found. And that was 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get into it, Wei. Vince McMahon comes out to start the show, and while... McMahon is coming to the ring. Paul Heyman announced that tonight it's cousin versus cousin. Crash Holly will take on Molly Holly.
Who cares about that? Why did you make mention of that?
Well, they announced it right off the top of the show, so it was a featured match tonight, Wei. Vince calls July 22nd, 2001 the greatest day in the history of sports entertainment because that will be the day that WWF versus WCW arrives.
Yes, that is why.
Which, as we look back, would be the most profitable day of this entire angle. One day.
Really?
Well, they did a huge amount of pay-per-view buys for that pay-per-view.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's true.
We'll get on to more of
that
later.
Just so everybody knows, the reason why WCW is allowed to have this pay-per-view for themselves is because of Linda McMahon. Shane, or I don't know, somebody got
They all
Linda.
Had shares in the company, okay. And I guess Linda and Shane together represent X amount of shares. But as I recounted last week, Wei, on this buyout, I think Shane McMahon would at the very least be suspended by the WWE for his actions in trying to steal a property of WWE, being WCW.
I completely did not understand all that. I didn't take that much away from the angle. What I simply got away from it was that Linda wanted Vince to compete with WCW. She was on SmackDown earlier that week, and then she just said, "Are you afraid, Vince? Are you afraid of competition?" And Vince
said... he should have said yes. Anyway, Vince is cutting a heel promo here, says you can't compare the two promotions, as it would be like comparing Washington, D.C. to the state of Washington. So I was confused here, Wade, because you're cutting a heel promo by being and basically trying to turn the WWF heel here. While these people are at a WWF show. Very confusing.
Yeah, they were trying to portray WCW babyface, which is made more confusing because you had certain members of WCW that were heels.
Not to mention, this is a WWF audience that for the last six years had been told WCW is, they are the competitor and we are better than them.
Yeah, I just, I don't know.
He compares the two world champions, Booker T and Steve Austin. So he buries Booker T, who will be in tonight's main event. And then he goes on to make a guarantee, but he's interrupted by Kurt Angle, who was still playing the dork at this point in time.
Yeah, he was very much a comedic character. Yet he was still just coming off of that very memorable hardcore match with Shane McMahon at King of the Ring.
Yes. Angle says that Booker has caused problems. And they show footage of Booker debuting at the King of the Ring, where he put Austin through the Spanish announce table. And I remember this at the time. Booker had a bunch of heat after this, and actually Bagwell brings this up in the interview, because he dropped Austin, he threw him too far, and Austin fucked up his back on that and had to work hurt. So Booker's first night in, instant heat. So that's good. Angle tells Vince that he's going to take care of Booker, which leads to Austin coming out and stating that he doesn't want Angle's help. Then they go back and forth with Angle proclaiming himself a hero and Austin calling him a jackass. And they go back and forth with hero, jackass. And I thought this was building up to a spot where Austin would say the other word and then Angle would call himself a jackass. But it did not lead to that. And then both, Angle just abruptly stopped and hugged Vince. And then Austin hugged Vince.
You're battling for hugs.
This was creepy.
It was a little creepy.
On the odd side.
Yeah, it is weird.
What? Did they have some relationship that they were battling for with?
No, Vince? They just a hug can be strictly platonic. It doesn't have to.
Did you ever hear the rumor about how this whole hugging gimmick started at this time?
No,
because apparently when the WWE signed Diamond Dallas Page, they were in Vince's office, and Vince went to shake his hand, and DDP instead went forward and hugged him. That's apparently the rumor of how. And then they turned this into a storyline, of course, because that meant money.
Yeah.
And portraying your two top.
Yeah. And then they turned DDP into a stalker.
Yeah. Tons of money left on the table here, as Austin and Angle were the comedy figures on this show. Shane McMahon comes out and calls Raw Sesame Street and says that tonight's show is brought to you by the letter I for Invasion, which of all the millions and countless options that were running through every fan's head when WCW was bought, the idea of that line being used on the first night did not occur. Tonight's show is brought to you by the letter I for Invasion.
Now let me get this straight. We have an Olympic gold medalist and the WWF champion competing for hugs? Is this Raw, or is this an episode of Sesame Street? Now, if it's an episode of Sesame Street, then tonight's show will be brought to you by the letter I. And no, Kurt, it's not one of your three I's. Hello, by the way. No, tonight's I stands for Invasion.
Why didn't they just get a giant helicopter and pour feces over this show? That line infuriated me, Way, and I don't know why, but it was like, these are the idiots that are going to self-destruct the biggest storyline to come along in years.
Something like that, it has to be Shane McMahon writing that for himself, and then everybody saying, oh, that's good, and you should use that.
Tonight's show is brought to you by the letter I for Invasion. That would be, if I ever wanted to write a book about why this invasion failed, that would be the title of the book.
I for Invasion?
I is for Invasion. Oh. Fuck. He announces that Booker T versus Buff Bagwell for the WCW title is the main event of tonight's show. And boy, did this get a response way in Tacoma.
And then his other line. Tonight, R-A-W becomes WCW.
That's not even clever. R-A-W becomes WCW. Holy shit. Backstage, Bradshaw and Farouk are discussing conspiracy theories and state that there is a mole in their yard working for WCW, and tonight they're going mole hunting, Way. Mole hunting. That brings us to our first match of the evening. Intercontinental Champion Albert. Intercontinental Champion Albert.
Yeah.
Defending the title against The Undertaker. The Undertaker. This might have been the only time he has ever challenged for this title.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's accompanied by Sarah, who previously had a tattoo of her name on The Undertaker's throat, which then disappeared.
Vanished. Undertaker comes out to Limp Bizkit. And I don't know if you noticed, John, but Albert came out to a favorite of yours.
Oh, yeah.
Yo, you dealing with the X Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate that factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that.
Uncle Cracker, everybody. One of the most memorable theme songs in WWE history.
You had this on your iPod, John. We were talking about this.
Back in the day, I did have this. It's not on my current iPod, but it was on my rotation.
Why?
At this point. I don't know why.
This has got to be one of the worst songs ever used in professional wrestling. The fact that they paid the licensing fees to use this song out of any other song in the world that they could have chosen.
Wasn't
why?
Uncle Cracker... Didn't he?
He was in Kid Rock, right? Yeah, he was like.
And then he branched off.
Yeah, yeah.
Successful departure.
And it's just like it's just a theme song that absolutely does not fit into. First of all, the X Factor stable doesn't fit their image at all. Whatever their image is, doesn't fit in wrestling. It's weird.
I don't know why, but it lasted a while. This match, well, not much. As we've said many times involving The Undertaker, he's gotten so much better in the last 5 years. But there was like a middle period of, I would say like 99 through 2004, where his matches were dreadful.
Yeah. I mean,
match, the high spot was a long bear hug by Albert that lasted 85 minutes.
Always weird. Always weird to see that.
I don't understand how a bear hug works.
Well, like, you squeeze a guy.
I guess you're squeezing a guy, but I mean, it always looks really lame, especially when Undertaker's girth is, you can tell that Albert's not even...
What it looks like is just two guys standing, and they're holding each other, like they're nervous to make out, but like, you know, but they're close and they want to, but they're nervous.
I always figure that if a bear hug was an effective spot, we'd have seen it in mixed martial arts by now, and we haven't.
No, we haven't.
Guys go on their back, body triangles, that makes sense. Yeah. But a standing bear hug?
You haven't seen a Boston Crab in mixed martial arts?
Why wouldn't Undertaker just sweep him and get top position on him? He trained at this point in time.
That's true. He's wearing the gloves, yeah.
Real shitty-looking chokeslam by Taker. Albert barely got up for this. Not pretty at all. Taker then went for the last ride. But then Diamond Dallas Page interferes with a chair and then hits the diamond cutter. DDP is then leaving. And who comes to the rescue but Sarah, who wants to challenge him to a fight and starts throwing punches at DDP until Kane comes down from behind, attacks DDP. Then Sarah gets the heat back by hitting a low blow on DDP.
And there goes your payoff.
Here is your... This was, at this point in time, him and D and Booker T were the biggest WCW talent, and they're doing comedy with DDP in this segment. And then Taker beats the shit out of them some more, and Taker, Kane, and Sarah stand in the ring, prevailing. And DDP looks like a total joke.
And who comes in for the save? Who saves DDP? But Albert. Albert, WWF's own Albert, helping... A WCW guy.
Maybe Albert is the mole.
Maybe he's the mole.
This was so dumb. So ass backwards. And on top of this, DDP was one of the guys who had a guaranteed contract and decided to take a buyout, except a lesser downside, and be working to come do this. He could have sat at home and made more money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the guy's dream to
be in the WWF. Age was not on his side. It's not like he had really 2 years to just...
Just sit back. Just put this angle into the context of even this own the program. Never mind the program. The first half hour of this show, you're portraying WCW as a babyface group, and now you've got DDP as a heel. How are the fans? Like, who are the fans supposed to side with?
Then we go backstage for what was the first of many vignettes involving Tori Wilson, who arrived, and Howard Finkel starts shaking her hand continuously and brags about being the first employee in the WWE and directs Tori to Vince's office. Now, I recapped that in about 10 seconds. This lasted about 2 minutes, the entire duration of which Howard Finkel is shaking Tori's hand. So I don't know if this was some inside joke or it was somehow to be like some masturbation subtlety. I didn't understand this. Okay, you didn't put much thought into it either.
Tori walks around backstage in a bikini. I thought that was of note.
I didn't know what she was wearing. She looked like she was at the beach.
Yeah, she was about to go to a
meeting. In Tacoma.
Yeah.
The Tacoma Beach. Up first, we have second match of the night. Crash Holly, who's for some reason accompanied by Jacqueline, taking on Molly Holly, who is with her boyfriend Spike Dudley. Molly hits a Hurricane Rana and then a victory roll attempt. I thought Crash Holly sold fantastic in this match. Like, just bumping perfectly for Molly. This was way better than The Undertaker and Albert. Crash then bounces into the ropes and then ends up going to the floor. And this looked terribly fucked up. Like, he was just trying to go outside the ropes and ended up slipping and fell. Looked very weird. Then Jacqueline guillotines Crash on the top rope. Molly hits this somersault splash off the top rope for the win. I believe they called that the Molly go-round.
Yes.
And Molly gets the win, and then Jackie attacks Crash and hits this crazy-looking tornado DDT onto Crash. So I assume coming out of this, we get a feud between Crash and Jacqueline.
Yeah. Crash Holly. I thought Heyman was great on commentary. This angle is so stupid, yet his voice and the tone of his delivery just makes everything sound so believable and a little bit legitimate.
What do you mean the storyline was ridiculous? Crash is upset that his cousin is dating a Dudley.
Okay.
Backstage, Vince is with Angle, Austin, and Deborah in the locker room. Tori shows up, and Angle introduces himself as an Olympic gold medalist. Tori wants to discuss a contract with Vince and asks to do it in private. So Austin gets up and asks Angle and Deborah to leave. But then Vince opts to leave with Tori, and then Angle and Austin argue over why Vince left. Absolutely pathetic that you're booking your two top guys as five-year-olds.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy it, though. I thought these two were hilarious.
Really?
They're very funny.
I hated it. This is Steve Austin.
Yeah.
And
so,
you're booking shitty comedy for him.
It's not... I mean, it wasn't Chappelle's show or...
This was horrible. I hated it. I hated Austin's entire heel turn, to be honest with you.
I thought they were very funny. To me, it just seemed so weird to have all this in the midst of the invasion. It seemed like they were doing very well before any of this WCW stuff came about.
We get a SmackDown recap of Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo debuting, and the WWF locker room running down and just destroys them. Like, absolutely stiff here. Hardcore Holly, Farouk, and Bradshaw stiffen the hell out of them. Bradshaw powerbombs Sean O'Hare so hard through a table that I thought Sean O'Hare was dead. Then they go backstage. Christian is with the King of the Ring trophy that Edge won. And he notes to Edge that if the brackets had been different and he had got Angle in the finals instead of the semifinals, he probably would have won. He says he's going to win the light heavyweight title tonight and then takes the trophy with him to polish as Edge looks annoyed. And this feud looked like it was building well, but I don't think it really culminated in what they had anticipated.
No.
Another vignette backstage. William Regal and Tajiri are in Regal's office. This is when Regal was still the WWF commissioner. And he starts imitating the worm to prepare Tajiri for his match tonight with Scotty Too Hotty. Regal's facial is always very solid, and I think that was the point of this vignette.
Sure.
Dudley boys come in. They ask, why are they wrestling Chris Jericho tonight? And Jericho is being punished because there was a rumor going around Way that had he won the WCW, had he won the WWF title at the King of the Ring pay-per-view, he was going to defect to WCW. So they read a rumor on the internet, and they were now going to book a guy for punishment because he was going to defect.
Don't they do that? Don't they do that all the time? Some guy, like Vince, reads the Observer and then says, "Ooh, you're
this guy's going to defect to a brand I own."
Yeah.
Not under my watch. Then we go... God, there were a lot of vignettes on this show in a row.
This is pro wrestling. That's
these were like the three pricks of the WWF locker room at the time. The APA and Hardcore Holly, with Holly saying he is not the Stooge, and Holly is wearing an Undertaker t-shirt, which would make him the exact definition of a Stooge. Holly says that maybe the APA should look at who wasn't at these WCW beatdowns. Because I was there. The APA note that that's a good point. Very sharp, these two. Bradshaw and Farouk. Now we go to our fourth straight vignette. Vince is with Tori in a shower, discussing how badly Tori wanted to be a WWF superstar and clearly working Vince to get a contract. Austin interrupts and asks why they're in a shower, which was what I was going to ask. And Austin wants to chat about the Invasion pay-per-view, which makes somebody that is focusing on this pay-per-view that's coming up in 3 weeks. Next up, Way, Tajiri taking on Scotty Too Hotty. Tajiri, super over at this point in time. This was right after he debuted, and my God, was this guy motivated to make an impression.
Chance of ECW when he did the Tarantula.
Don't hear those anymore.
Nope.
Tarantula was very, very over here, as was the Worm when Scotty set it up.
Yeah.
He was going for the Worm as he went to deliver the chop. Tajiri sprayed him with mist and then hits the Mafia kick for the win. I like the finish to this match.
Yeah, me too.
Tajiri gets the win. Tajiri was, I thought he was programmed really solid right at the start of his run in WWF. And he was a guy that I assumed, like, they were going to put in Kai and Tai or something.
Yeah, yeah. His pairing with Regal, I really, really enjoyed.
Very good, those two together.
Yeah.
We're now...
back to the real...
Yeah, real... back to Vince and Tori Wilson, in case you had forgotten about them. They're now in a mop closet. Vince starts kissing her neck, and Angle interrupts, and Angle shows Tori his medals, and Angle replies, "I think she likes me." Booker T is backstage, about to buy a pop from a pop machine, and Test wishes him good luck tonight. Booker asks if Test would ever come to WCW, and Test replies, "It depends on the competition and the money," and delivers this line with the most lame babyface delivery you're ever going to hear. Booker goes back to feeding his bill to the machine. It's like, how could you make your top guy look more dumb?
He's getting a Pepsi, I think.
Buying a Pepsi.
Yeah.
Dork. Can't say much, though, because they were booking their own champion just as stupid tonight.
Yeah. He's wearing a belt. Although he had no shirt on. He was only wearing a belt standing next to the pop machine.
It's funny, because this is when they were just booking Booker as a normal guy, and not like the idiot that they would turn him into a few months later after the Weakest Link.
Normal guys, a few weeks. Normal guys buy Pepsi.
I guess so. Next up, the Dudley Boys, the tag team champions against Chris Jericho. Amazing that Jericho's theme music has remained the same.
Oh, it's a good theme.
All these years.
It's a good song.
So this match necessitated over the rumor that Jericho, had he won a match, was supposedly going to defect brands. He never won the title, nor is he defected, so I don't know what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
This was a two-on-one handicap match. They didn't even have to tag in and out Way, so I don't understand why the Dudleys were complaining to Regal about this match. What was unfair about this?
They were just questioning the motives behind the match, that's all. If they had no problems with the match itself. At the end of that segment, they said, "Why didn't you just ask us to put him through a table, if that's all you wanted?"
Well, halfway through this match, all of a sudden they're tagging in and out. But the first, like, 3 minutes, it was just anything goes.
No. Maybe they felt bad.
A stroke of conscience overcame them. Heyman notes that the Invasion pay-per-view is going to take place at the Gund Arena, which is the same arena that Raw took place the night of the final Nitro, Way. Irony. Jericho applies the Walls of Jericho, but Bubba pulls the referee out as Devon taps, and then Bubba breaks the submission and gets a table. Spike runs in and hits the acid drop on Bubba, who lands on top of Devon. This allows Jericho to hit the Lion Salt on Devon for the win. So Chris Jericho should be your new tag team champion. More Vince and Tori. Now they're in a bathroom way. Tori had to have been the worst actress by far on this roster. Her skits were terrible on this. These were all carried by Vince.
Mr. McMahon, can we possibly maybe finish up our conversation from last Thursday about a contract?
They start making out. Tori starts complaining about his cologne and that it's strong. And then Perry Saturn comes out of the washroom, so apparently we're led to believe that he just took a dump in the washroom, and says, "You're welcome," while he's carrying his mop.
And we're also led to believe that Tori Wilson thinks there's cologne out there that smells like shit.
What a dumbass. We then go to a video of Chris Benoit from Birmingham, Alabama, describing his neck injury that requires fusion surgery. He cites the King of the Ring match that caused it, but it was actually the TLC match from a month prior.
You sent me a text earlier this week while you were watching this, and you noted that Chris Benoit is in this show, and there's a shot of him with Nancy.
Very creepy. Very creepy.
We cannot avoid him.
I've officially given up on ever getting away from Benoit in these reviews.
Next week we'll review the Chris Benoit DVD. Just get it over with.
I hear he's in that. X-Pac versus Christian for the light heavyweight title, which meant not once but twice we get the theme.
Yo, you dealing with the X-Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate that X-Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that.
Uncle Cracker way, as X-Pac came out to it, taking on Christian.
I liked it better when X-Pac came out to it, because he would always, like, wave his hands. Like,
what was he doing?
He's just like, I don't know. He's just like, feeling the music, feeling the...
Looked like he had ADD.
He probably does. Probably has a lot of things that he takes medication for.
They built a just incredible interfering with the light heavyweight title. Edge stopped him, and the ref was distracted with Credible and Edge as X-Pac grabbed the title off the ground, hit Christian with the title for the win. This match featuring all four heels in this. Another strong booking here.
Wait, and Edge was a heel at the time?
Well, he was kind of pseudo-heel at this point. He wasn't really a babyface.
Man, but Justin Credible's run in the WWF was so meaningless that the guy even cut one promo during his whole run there.
Yeah, they did nothing with him. They didn't see any...
I mean, I noted...
Old guy who wore jeans wasn't a good fit.
I just noted how in this entire show there were so many ECW guys. I mean, you had Raven come out at one point. You got Taz. You got Justin Credible. Jerry Lynn was one of the guys in helping the APA. Rhino. All these guys. They grabbed their whole roster.
Yep, they just took them all in. So this continued Christian being annoyed that he was never winning and was building up to Christian turning on Edge, which would not happen until September.
Yeah.
In Toronto.
Was it in Toronto? That Raw, right?
It was where he took the Stanley Cup and beat the shit out of Edge with it.
The trophy.
In Toronto. It was great. Backstage, the APA decides that Test must be the mole because he wasn't there for the beatdown. Referee Jack Doan says Test is getting ready for his match and was seen talking to Booker T. That means he must be the mole.
Yeah.
They show Taz at WWF New York, and they replay an angle from SmackDown where he demanded that Austin apologize to Michael Cole for beating up Cole. And Austin says, "I will not apologize." And he beats the shit out of Taz. Taz. This is who the world champion was spending time with on TV.
Yeah.
The play-by-play guy on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny because this past week they did the same angle with Bryan Danielson beating up Michael Cole.
But Taz was a world champion himself.
Yeah, but that was not important here. He was a commentator.
Matter, right?
He wasn't doing anything at this time.
I just loved... They showed Taz at WWF New York in front of a plate of food. And to show that he's pissed off. The plate of food is not eaten. And he's just looking so bitter. And Taz is just like... picking at his fries.
The food sucks at WWF New York. Well, it would upset you too. That's why it was one out of business.
I'm just amused at the idea that this man... has been pissed off for 4 days since SmackDown.
So much he can't eat 4 days later.
this grown man, your former ECW champion, this supposed badass, can't get over the fact.
Not to mention that it's like you're trying to portray like this guy who's an athlete and stuff, and you put a plate of fries in front of him. Why don't you give him a salad or something? Make him appear healthy. No, we're going to put the greasy shit in front of Taz.
Oh, man. ECW.
You get amused by the weirdest stuff.
This is funny.
WWF New York, I wish that still existed. I would totally go.
I heard it was so overpriced for people who went there, and I'm sure the food sucked. Rhino versus Test is next. They show a clip from the previous week where Mike Awesome powerbombed Rhino onto a ladder on top of cement. Oh, this looked like the most brutal bump ever.
Oh, and before that, he hit him legitimately, like, really hard with the 2x4.
He sprinted and hit him with all his weight behind this 2x4. These guys were fucking out of their mind. Yeah. They announced that the winner of this match will face Mike Awesome at Invasion for the Hardcore title.
Okay. So this is a number one contendership for the Hardcore title.
Yes.
Why would you have one of these when you could just run in with a chair at the end of someone else's match and win it that way?
That's a great point. Just for the record, everybody, that match at Invasion never happened. Mike Awesome would work a tag match with Lance Storm against Edge and Christian. The Raw locker room ends up coming out, and gee, what a menacing bunch these were.
Yeah.
Raven, Jerry Lynn, Haku, Ron Killings, Bull Buchanan, S.A. Rios, and Billy Gunn wearing a belly top t-shirt.
Bull Buchanan wearing a green Hawaiian shirt.
This guy looked like Jimmy Buffett.
Why? Why? Out of all the shirts that you would wear
Bull Buchanan,
onto TV.
He looked ridiculous.
Why wear a shirt at all? You're a wrestler. You don't even have to wear a shirt. But why wear a green Hawaiian shirt that you probably brought from your Florida home?
S.A. Rios, Haku. Oh. Amazing.
Kai and Tai.
Christ. These were the guys that were not going to put up with the bullshit of WCW. Like, that there tells you right there. No one of any importance in the WWF gave a shit about these guys. It was the mid-carders.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this angle. Just every turn here, they're making dumb moves. They worked a pretty good match. Rhino countered a pump handle slam, and then Tess hit a huge big boot. Then Bradshaw got on the apron, clothesline Test, and Rhino hits the Gore for the win. Then the locker room beats the shit out of Test, and Test is left laying in the middle of the ring by the jobbers.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they found their mole way. Up next, Matt Hardy and Lita against Big Show and Trish Stratus. Odd pairing of Big Show and Trish Stratus. Jeff Hardy is wearing some horrible-looking red shorts to the ring.
And a hat.
And a hat, yes. I guess this is the
like
summer
a tennis cap.
For Jeff Hardy, yeah. They announced that PlayStation presents Invasion, and I thought it would have been cool if they had PlayStation and another game console present Invasion.
Why is that?
They have two.
Oh.
Like Nintendo 64 and PlayStation present Invasion.
And then maybe...
WCW got a different sponsor.
And then Microsoft would align with Sony, and they would have an alliance.
Yeah. And then they would find a way that only the shitty applications from Microsoft would be used. And then they'd have applications go back and forth so that you don't even know which one was Microsoft and which one was Sony at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And then,
but you wouldn't get any of the important stuff from Microsoft. Like, Microsoft's Word would stay home, Excel would take the guaranteed buyout, and you'd be stuck with fucking Notepad to headline the pay-per-view.
And then somehow Nintendo would win the war, and then Nintendo itself would branch off into two different brands of Nintendo.
We're losers.
Yeah.
This match came about when Lita grabbed Trish from the apron last week and ripped her blouse off. Matt Hardy's wardrobe, brought to you by Hot Topic in this match. Heyman notes that the pay-per-view will be the best of the WWF versus the best of WCW. Lie. Crowd, I noted here, had been hot all night. It was a pretty good crowd in Tacoma.
Yeah, very much.
This is obvious. This is more often looked back as, you know, this crowd killed it. And they did. But they were hot up until that main event.
Yeah, they knew what they wanted.
Lita went for a seated senton, but Big Show catches her, and then she leaned down as Big Show's neck went down, and I thought for sure Lita was going to go for a triangle here. She had it perfectly set up if she wanted to on Big Show. That would have been a great spot. Show attempts a double choke slam on Lita and Matt Hardy, but they counter and suplex him. Stratus hits a bulldog on Lita for a near fall, then tries another bulldog and gets her leg caught in the rope, and then the worst twist of fate I've ever seen in my life, delivered by Lita to Trish, both of these women receiving fault on this because it was executed and taken terribly. And this set up Lita hitting a moonsault for the win.
Yeah, clearly this was before Trish's days as a good wrestler.
Yes,
this was she had some terrible spots.
This was night and day from her 2002-2003 evolution. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, you could hear Big Show yelling on top of Trish and yelled, "You stupid little bitch!" at Trish. And this caused Jeff Hardy to attack the Big Show. And then Show yelled uncontrollably like an animal. Weird.
That's what he does. He's a giant.
Had you forgotten about Vince and Tori, Way? Because they're back. Vince wants to meet up after the show, and then Tori suggests another area in the arena where they won't be bothered. Then we see Shane McMahon walking backstage, and Buff Bagwell approaches and says that he doesn't need luck tonight. He relies on skills. And then he ends it with, "Got it? Get it." Got it? Get it. T-shirt idea.
It was so weird seeing Buff Bagwell on WWF TV.
Yeah.
And WWF camera.
This was the only time.
Yeah.
This was the one show he did.
His first appearance and his only appearance.
Jesus. The WWE mid-carders are celebrating, capturing the mole. But then Sergeant Slaughter comes in and says that Test was at his post last Monday at Madison Square Garden. First of all, why did he have a post? Is this like all the guys had areas of the building to cover?
Yeah, that's what they're insinuating.
Anyway, he says that he was talking to Test about his 1981 boot camp match with Pat Patterson, and that Test didn't have a cell phone, so he can't be the mole.
Test didn't have a cell phone?
He didn't have a cell phone on him, so he couldn't be contacted or be contacting the mole to set anything up, Way.
Test should get a cell phone. Everybody has cell phones these days.
So, they logically gave a reason why Tess cannot be the mole. Of course, a month later, they would reveal the mole to be Test.
Did they?
Yep.
Oh, my God. Raven, I noted Raven was in the APA locker room, just standing above all the other guys, drinking beers with them. And I just noted how unhappy this guy, Raven, must have been to be standing there in the background as these guys were doing this angle.
Yeah.
Drinking a beer with
you're not even
guys.
The focal point with the jobbers. So, Jim Ross and Paul Heyman at this point sign off as the rest of the show will be the WCW portion of Raw. We get a shitty-looking light show and pyro for WCW. And to kick off WCW's appearance, we have Shane McMahon come out and dance.
Yes. I mean, I thought they did a pretty decent job, given, you know, what money they had, of trying to make it the whole set look different from Raw and have it.
How did it look different?
Well, they had WCW logos. They had WCW logos on the back.
They were mics of WCW.
Yeah, and they had changed the mic flash to a WCW mic flash.
Oh, wow.
And they changed the little logo in the corner to WCW. They could have just had a WWF logo up there and brought the two guys out there.
Come on. That's obvious. Obviously, no. You would change the logo.
No, not necessarily.
I'm not giving them any credit for this. This looked like a WWF production here.
New graphics. I mean, they tried to make it seem like
they didn't even use the old WCW logo. They created their own new WCW logo.
Because they felt that brand was a shitty, abandoned brand. Failed
there
brand.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, the brand itself, that's why they're trying
to
rebrand.
What are they trying to push? It's still WCW.
They're trying to make this the new, cool WCW.
Who are you trying to attract? The people who like this old, dead brand?
They're trying to attract all audiences, even their own.
I would love to have been sitting there when they decided to change the logo and their reasoning for it, because you can extend that to this entire brand. Why are you even bothering if you feel this brand is dead and there's no value attached to it? They would prove that themselves in a short amount of time. Shane McMahon came onto the mic and said, "Welcome to WCW," and the crowd booed. Awesome start.
Mm-hmm.
He then introduced our announcers for tonight to be accompanied by Stacy Keibler, Scott Hudson, wearing a suit jacket with a WCW t-shirt, and Arn Anderson. Keebler is the ring announcer, and Nick Patrick is the referee.
William Regal also received boos.
Yes. William Regal came out along with Tajiri and has security remove Shane McMahon from the arena. So Shane McMahon has the ability to book the main event but not stay in the building. Why didn't Regal have him thrown out right at the start of the show so he didn't have to fuck around with his show at all?
I don't know. I don't know why they bothered throwing him out. What did that accomplish at the
end? Well, they said security was not only going to remove him from the building but escort him to his hotel room.
Okay.
Arn says that today is bigger than D-Day or the moon landing. It's WCW on Raw. Yeah. Buzz Aldrin might have taken offense to that line.
Well, it was staged. Of course it was bigger. This was real.
They show a graphic for Booker versus Bagwell with the Raw theme music underneath. Just a note. And then that leads us to our main event way. Booker T versus Buff Bagwell for the WCW title with Scott Hudson proclaiming WCW is back in business. Arn states that this is the pinnacle of Booker's career. Keebler, just horrible, I thought, at ring announcing. Very annoying. Like,
she sucks.
Nails on a chalkboard. Arn says that Booker may be the best WCW has ever had. Which, why are we making such ridiculous statements? I thought that was Matt Stryker's gimmick.
He's never done this before.
Arn, great, great promo. Didn't care for him too much on color commentary.
No.
Some of the highlights of this match way. Booker delivered his sidekick, which when he landed, he fell over. Boring chance, 3 minutes into the match.
Yeah, the crowd turned on this immediately. They paid not to see Buff Bagwell versus Booker T as their main event.
The best spot of the entire year. Bagwell goes into the ropes. Bagwell holds on to the ropes. Booker goes for a drop kick, but obviously misses because Bagwell holds on to the ropes. Sees Booker goes down and instinctively just takes a back bump without any contact. Boos get louder. Man. Fans are treating both of these men as heels. They don't know who is the babyface. We see an axe kick by Booker and then a spin-a-rooney, which leads to Austin and Angle running in, and Bagwell, Austin, and Angle beat on Booker. Anderson can't believe Bagwell would do this on the biggest night in the history of wrestling. Which contradicts Vince McMahon's opening promo, who stated the Invasion pay-per-view would be the biggest night in the history of sports entertainment. I guess wrestling, sports entertainment. The biggest nights of each occurring within 3 weeks of each other. Then, during this big angle with WCW and WWE, we got to cut back to more of Vince McMahon and Torrie Wilson as they are now in a laundry room where Torrie undresses Vince McMahon and leads to Vince closing his eyes, turning around, and Linda McMahon is there for the finale. And then Vince falls over in some garbage. And this was a great metaphor for the start of this WCW angle.
I was so embarrassed to watch this.
Terribly embarrassing.
I had to lower the volume of Vince's grunts so that no one else in my house could hear. It was like watching porn.
Creepy.
I had to hide to watch this.
Then we go back to Austin, Angle, and Bagwell attacking Booker, and they throw him out of the arena. Bagwell goes to celebrate with Austin and Angle, and then they attack Bagwell. The two biggest heels in the company get the biggest babyface reaction on the show as they toss Bagwell out of the arena. And that's the end of the show, way, and for all intents and purposes, this was the end of WCW. Because as soon as the show was over, Vince changed all of his plans and stated that WCW was not strong enough to have their own show or their own brand. There is no interest in this company. They are dead. This was the true death of WCW, more so than the last show we reviewed in March. The end. Any closing thoughts, Way?
From seeing the crowd and seeing the product itself, it seemed like this was a bit of a schizophrenic time for the WWE because they had already had all these plans made for themselves. Aside from WCW, and then the whole thing happened with the buyout, and somehow they decided to incorporate little bits and pieces of this invasion into an already existing storyline. And I just think it just got in the way of so much. I really thought WWF was on a good run themselves without any of this invasion stuff.
This significantly, I think, brought down people's interest because their hopes were so high for this invasion. They never, I think, had the intention to book WCW on the same level as WWE, and that was clearly apparent on this.
Well, they couldn't. How could they, given the talent that they had, and given this the stigma?
You could still present them in a way where they're at least. They're booking this.
Yeah.
If they book them strong, they'll get over strong. I don't know if you necessarily. Yes, it would have been better with the bigger names, but that wasn't happening. Those guys weren't going to break their contracts.
No,
but portraying DDP like an idiot here, selling for Sarah, and putting Buff Bagwell into the main event with Booker T and into this crowd, I don't know.
I think even if you did have best case scenario, face DDP versus.
How about some background on who these guys are? This audience, if they're WWF fans, they don't even understand. Who these people are, what they've done. Why should I care about any of them?
But even a Booker T versus a DDP main event, you know, with the best booking in the world, I don't think people would have preferred that over, let's say, a Stone Cold or a Kurt Angle appearance in the main event.
No,
these fans wanted to see their top stars in the WWE perform.
I'm just saying that if this is the hand you're dealt, then you should do the best you can with that talent. I mean, ECW is a classic example of guys that were, you know, they were booked strong. And there's a reason that, you know, Balls Mahoney still gets a pop in 2010 when he shows up on a Ring of Honor show. And this was a frustrating show to watch because you could tell after this show that this invasion, there was nothing that they were going to do to make it to the level that you wanted it to be at.
Yeah. I mean, I could feel their frustration, too, because if you are the booking team, what do you do? What do you do with the...
one thing that Bagwell mentions, and we're going to get to that interview in just a second, is that Raw the next week was in Atlanta. Why the need to start this the week before in Tacoma?
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Like, why not play this to your strengths?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that to me, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah. The Atlanta crowd would have probably given them a much better reaction.
That should have been the launch of WCW was in Atlanta. Anyway, Wei, we're now going to get to this. Before we end off, what do you give this out of the 10? I'm going to give it a 0, to be honest, because this was the complete definition of a failure. I hated the skits with Vince and Torrey, and the entire build of this was to get WCW off and running, and its legs were cut out, and it was dead. So I cannot applaud this show because it failed at its biggest objective.
I like the lights.
Okay. The lights and the logo.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everyone, as I mentioned at the top, I had a chance earlier this week to speak with Buff Bagwell. I ended up chatting with him for 25 minutes. We're not going to air the whole thing here because the entire interview will be up on liveaudiowrestling.com later this week. But I'm going to play a portion of that interview, and we start off talking about the booking of the invasion angle, and if he felt that there were a lot of egos involved in this when it came to the booking, and we will, of course, touch on the match with Booker T in Tacoma, and how he got fired involving an incident with Sugar Shane Helms.
Do you feel that the egos in the locker room during that invasion period, I mean, it seemed that here was a storyline that fans had wanted to see for so long, WWF and WCW, and yet that when the WCW guys came in, it was as if, you know, this is still a competing company, and it seemed that a lot of ego was prevalent at that time.
Well, there wasn't, I'll be honest with you, we only do what we're told.
Yeah.
So it's the bosses. You know, we thought exactly what you're thinking, and what every fan thought. We're thinking, man, gosh darn, this is going to be great. This is going to be phenomenal. I mean, the fans get to get, you know, they finally get to see the Sting versus Stone Cold, the Sting versus, The Undertaker. I mean, you know, tag team, Marcus Bagwell and Chris Benoit versus, you know, whoever. I mean, it's just endless. It was endless storylines that, honest to God, I think that's really messed up.
Now, tell us a bit about the match on Raw that they did in Tacoma with yourself and Booker T. Tell us a bit about that match and your thoughts on the match looking back. I mean, what happened that night with the two of you?
Well, back on that night, we actually knew that something was up. Why would you wrestle? See, these are the facts that nobody knows. But all you do is go back and look at a counter or something, and it proved. But literally, that's when we found out it wasn't making sense, and why is this not making sense, and this ain't good. And what happened was, is we were in Tacoma on Raw, and in 7 days, we're going to be in Atlanta. Now, if you own the WWF, would you put Booker T and Buff Bagwell in Tacoma, Washington, or Atlanta, Georgia for the Invasion first match?
Sure, it's a no-brainer. You do it in Atlanta.
No-brainer. So it being such a no-brainer, we're actually whispering to each other, going, what do you think? I don't know. I mean, we didn't know. We just knew it wasn't good. And they threw us out of the building. And see, at that stage, Booker had heat. He had heat more than I did because he had left early. He missed a spot with Stone Cold. So I actually went like, it's competition. I was like, all right, heat's off me now. Good. And then I didn't do anything wrong, but I started getting heat. And I started getting, when I'd leave the locker room, they'd push my top hat in. And, I'm such an easy guy to get along with to a certain degree. So one time I got punched and I walked in, didn't say a word, which is called not selling it. And that's what you're not supposed to do in wrestling. So I came in, I fixed my hat, put it back in the box, Something happened again an hour later or so, and I leave again, I had the question again. Well, the third time I ready to leave, before I got up to go, I crushed my own top hat in. And when I got back, the top hat was fixed. So that's the comedy that they, that's not what I'm looking for, but that is the way that wrestlers do things. They do things to really just push to wit's end. But it didn't push me at all to wit's end. I thought it was great. I thought it was hilarious and all that. So they couldn't run me off. And that's when I think Vince just, made a decision or whatever. But they never give none of the WWE guys a fair shake, and I hate that.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's also a story out there that there was some incident involving Shane Helms that led to your release. Is that true? Because I want to hear your side of that.
Well, it probably had a little bit to do with it, but if Vince set me, Shane, once again, if it was done correctly, and he set me and Shane down and talked to us, did nobody get fired? For starters, let me start the story by saying this. When you're Buff Bagwell and you've been in the industry for 11 years and you've done what you did to the industry and for the industry, and it's done for you what it's done, you don't get fired over one or two things. You just don't. So let me start it with that. You just don't. And, for example, when they fired me in Atlanta, it did exactly what I think Vince wanted. It straightened up the locker rooms. They were like, Buff Bagwell just got fired, dude. No. I had to be, once again, my whole career, sacrificial lamb, but I was the one they made the point out of. And it hit home. And the locker rooms, said, look, man, it ain't worth it. And they started getting along and blah, blah, blah. So the Shane thing was we were just all at school one day, wrestling school, that we were demanded we had to go to because it was a 20-foot ring. And Vince wanted us to go down there and run the ropes and learn it because it does make a difference. The 2 feet extra does make a difference. And not a week worth of difference, but still I went and, didn't complain, did my job. And about the fifth day of that, we all are sick and tired of going. And so we're resting during one of the best workouts we ever had. What we've done is we got a bunch of guys, we had 12 guys, which is all the WCW guys that they hired. And we were all on the ring apron. There were two guys in the ring. And we would just tag out and tag somebody and go. Tag somebody and go. And you can't learn no better than that. And that's how we were doing it. And we had a really good workout. So after that was over, we got down and rested for a minute. Shane didn't do it with us that day. And we busted our butt that day. So Shane I'm standing on the floor with my elbows on the apron. And he's kind of to my left talking to me, and he says something about my hair. He goes, you're starting to lose your hair a little bit, baby. And the boy's, oh, I said, yeah. I said, you know what I can't wait for? I said, I can't wait for that first WWE Raw interview, buddy. Hey, this is Super Thing, Helm, Dandy. He's got a bad lisp. I mean, let me back up. Did have one and had surgery for it. And also got to say this, too. I could give two craps about this story. I was asked about it. Somehow, every time I talk about this, it comes back that I'm the one bringing it up. I care two less. I'm giving you what you asked.
Mm-hmm.
So I say that just so if it comes back, I can say, brother, I got asked.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he, then of course it escalated, and he said something about something else and a little bigger woo from the boys. And I said, listen, bro, I said, we can do one or two things. I said, you can shut up and let's all drop it. I said, or I can beat your brains out of your head. I said, either one you want. And he said, take your best shot. And he didn't get shot out of his mouth to where I'd hit him. I'd slapped him, open head slap. But it rolled him, because he was so much littler than me, rolled him down the ropes. And I, as soon as I hit him, I went, what are you doing, Mark? Oh, you've done it again. You've messed it up again. What are you, idiot? So I started walking away. Well, little did I know, he had a... Imagine a regular size, if you went to get a water, and a cooler, this regular size water bottle. Imagine that frozen. That was underneath his shirt in an ace bandage, icing something, and that's supposedly why he didn't work that day. But I didn't know that ice was under there, and I didn't know a brick was underneath his shirt. I turned to walk off, and he hits me with that thing, and I don't know how I didn't go down, but I didn't, but 20 stitches, and they had to, whatever it's called, and they fry it, to make it quit bleeding, and it was a big deal, dude.
Wow. And
I never called WWE, WWF at the time. I never asked them to pay for it. I used my own money, my own doctors. I kept it quiet. I didn't. And then I started realizing, all the boys wanted to keep this quiet, and there's no way this is going to remain quiet. So I went straight to Johnny Ace, and I said, Johnny, I think I'll talk to you. And he got all 12 of us together, and we all talked it out, shook hands, everything. And 7 days from there, I was fired.
Wow. I mean,
and so let me give you this to you. The night he hit me, the day he hit me at school, you got to realize I was Buff Bagwell, and everybody there knew I definitely had a job. So he's crying, holding the towel to my head. He's crying, and I'm going, bro, don't worry about it. I hit you first. Let's just fix this. Come on. But it was bleeding profusely, and he's crying, holding a towel on my head. Well, the next day I see him. He's with the Hardy Boys. And I say, hey, Shane, what's up, buddy? And he didn't speak. And I went, that's when I went to Johnny. So we got it all worked out, we thought, and I ended up getting fired. Not quite sure.
Tell us a bit, Buff, about your dealings with Jim Ross. I mean, he—I imagine—was the one that negotiated your contract to come to the WWF. What did you think of Jim Ross?
Actually, I dealt with Vince.
Oh, okay.
I dealt with Vince until WCW went away. You're right. I apologize. Then I did deal with Vince. I mean, with Jim. But at first it was Vince. It was just, I flew up, Vince did the old wine and dine, he flies you up and everything, and I was getting ready to go to that company, and he didn't, obviously, he was getting ready to buy the company, and of course, why would he fly me up? So he flies me up, we did the meeting, everything. I couldn't get out of my contract, but I couldn't in about 4 months. And, he said, we got a job here, and things were right. Well, the worst thing that could happen to me, before that 4 months was up, he bought the company. And I became Buff the Stuff, Bagwell to, what was your name again? And so he had a lot of leverage there. So that's when it all happened. I just all the luck and you know timing I had worked out for me. Kind of all ran out and kind of got hit with all the bullets at once. You know.
What was your initial reaction when you heard about the WWF purchasing WCW? Was there a feeling on your part that there would be a job waiting for you? Was there any worry on your part? What was your reaction?
I know. Of course, we were all we're in Panama City at the Panama City show, and they were via satellite talking to each other, and it was complete depression for everybody. There was not one guy going, we're fine. Everybody was going, this ain't good, because no matter what, we knew it wasn't good, a company going away. You know, because that takes, like I said, when you see McDonald's, what's beside it? There's always something beside it, Burger King, Wendy's, or something. You know, all of a sudden, he wanted to stand alone as McDonald's with no other fast food in the world, and I think it hurt wrestling instead of keeping some competition, you know.
Now, that same night that the final Nitro was going on, Raw that night, I'm sure you remember this segment, Vince McMahon came into the ring, and he named off a bunch of WCW talent, and you got a tremendous reaction.
He named off five.
Yeah.
And I'm on the way home, and to this day, I've never seen the footage. But he named off five. The reason I can say that so confidently is because my father's very solid. I was heading home in a state of depression, like everybody was. WCW was gone, period. Everybody was depressed. And my dad called me. He goes, hey, man, what's going on? Man, just trying to get on. He goes, well, listen, man, I got some good news. And he told me the story. He said, and you got maybe the biggest pop. He said, I said, well, God, that's great. And see, all the big talent, when they heard that, they knew I had a job. So the medium talent for sure knew, and the lower talent, my God, he'll be here for 20 years. And all of a sudden, I was gone in a week. So it was very, very weird.
Did you always get along pretty well with Shane McMahon? Because he was a guy that always spoke very highly of you. What was your relationship like with Shane?
I think okay, but you never know. I mean, I said literally, those guys, people, you understand this, it took me 3 months to do my contract, and I was fired in 2 weeks. And during that 2 weeks, they only saw me three times. So how bad, after meeting Buff Bagwell or hearing Buff Bagwell, how long does it take you to realize, man, that guy shouldn't have been fired that quick? So there's much more to it than I know. I don't have any idea. I don't really know who my friends' enemies are up there. I knew they were at WCW. And it was a different ball game up there, man. It was a total different ball game. It was like Chevy and Ford combining,
So that was Buff Bagwell, everybody, and you can check him out online at therealbuff.com, which is his website that you can go check out. And the entire interview with Buff Bagwell, the 25-minute version, will be up on liveaudiowrestling.com in the download section later this week. And Wei, now let's get to some feedback. You have some to get to?
Yeah, we got some feedback. We got one from Brian Hillhouse, who says, hey guys, I remember the night of the final Nitro like it was yesterday. I had been a diehard fan of the World Wrestling Federation since just before WrestleMania 2 in 1986. I suddenly developed a deep hatred for WCW when they started Nitro, and I even stood by the WWF when Nitro was dominating the ratings with the NWO angle, and Vince was throwing characters like Rockabilly, Aldo Montoya, Salvatore Sincere, and much older Rock and Roll Express at me. When the WWF finally won and Vince bought the company, I was extremely happy that the Monday Night Wars were over. I was marking out the entire night. But since then, September 2004 to be exact, I've totally stopped watching the now WWE because it seemed like they were no longer trying. They had gone from doing sevens and eights every week with competition to doing threes without competition. And it was Triple H, whose appearances on television seemed to skyrocket after the final Nitro, that became the only reason I finally threw up my hands and said, fuck this show. Today, as far as the product goes, I only download the annual Hall of Fame ceremonies. And now when I hear the names on the WWE roster, I almost always have no clue who the person is. Like, who the crap is Sheamus, and should I care? Love the
show.
Well,
in fairness, you're admitting you don't watch. So why would you know? That would be like, well, I stopped watching 24. Who's this chick with Jack Bauer? People always say that to me. It's like, oh, I stopped watching. I mean, who are these guys now? Well, you're not watching. Of course you're not going to know who they are.
But I've been watching, and like, I don't
fair enough if you're not interested in the product, but I mean, you know.
I don't care about Sheamus.
Hmm?
I don't care about Sheamus.
Okay, well, you don't, but you watch. He doesn't watch.
Anyway. Yes. Once you get the next one.
All right. Richard Lee writes in, "Hey guys, love the review of the Weakest Link episodes. Reminded me of how dumb that game is. It's still on the air in England, and you can find these on BBC Kids on satellite. Anyway, can't wait to hear the final skirmish between WCW and WWE. I remember watching that at the Royal Canadian Legion on their big screen TV. Me and my brother were allowed in on the public bingo night and sneaked to the back TV room to watch wrestling instead. That'd be probably the best way because you could get free booze there. And I had heard that something was up through the weekend, but we never thought that in the end Vince would buy the company out. Problem was, at the time, TSN only had Raw, so Nitro we caught on tape a few days later. And I agree, that was not a fun show to watch, but at least we learned something from all this. TNA sure didn't. At least they had the sense to go back to Thursday. Thanks. Richard Lee from East Selkirk, Manitoba." And now Jordan Ducharme sends this one away.
Jordan says, "Actually, though it's stunning that a company as popular and as large as WCW would have fallen so horribly, all due to stupidity, I do believe that if the product is good, people will watch, and due entirely to poor writing and stupid ideas alone, WCW, a company that was at one point earning millions of dollars every year, turned into the worst shit wrestling fans have ever seen to this day." Okay, and then I'll just go through the rest. Ben Brisebois: "John, I can understand why you disagree with me about Raw, especially comparing it to the current product, but at least with the current product, once in a while, they have a good TV match which lasts longer than 3 minutes, but it started to save all the good stuff for the pay-per-views. It just got to the point where pay-per-views were all I wanted to watch."
Well, the goal of a good television show would be that last line, to buy the pay-per-views, but, I mean, granted, I mean, 99... I mean, yes, you had a lot shorter television matches, but once Benoit and those guys came in, I mean, you were getting some quality stuff on TV. I would say way more than today. Mm-hmm. That 2001 period where you had
With the tag team
Benoit
matches.
And Angle, you had TLC on TV, Austin and Benoit had some excellent TV matches. Yeah. There was that big tag match where Hunter tore his quad that was a match of the year candidate. I mean, there was some, granted, there's some TV shows that, yeah, you'd get the, you know, cheated on the main event, but they had an excellent TV product in 2001.
I find that watching shows...
certain parts of 2001.
I find that watching shows like... I mean, yeah, you had all those, but then you had shows like the one we reviewed today, and I just could care less about the matches. I found myself paying more attention to the stupid skits than I would the matches. Simply
well, that was the main focus of that show. I mean, yeah, there was nothing standout on this episode of Raw. I mean... Your main event came across terribly.
Even at the Raw we went to this week on Monday.
Yeah, that's true.
In Toronto. I think I paid more attention to the people talking than the matches themselves. Colin Orell finally says, "Just listen to Review Away, and John didn't know what sugar smacks were. Eat more cereal."
I will take that note, so thank you. And someone has actually posted a picture of sugar smacks on the Review Away site, so thank you very much. In terms of our Photoshop contest, Way, I thought we'd give it another week because we didn't get to formally announce the contest on the show. So if people missed my posting on the wall earlier this week, we're doing a contest right now where anyone that does any Photoshop, and it doesn't have to involve me and Way, it can involve other people, we're going to open it up for another week.
I think it should involve... Some people from the law, I think it should. Otherwise, it'd just be open to people finding other Photoshop photos.
Fair enough. Okay, fine. We'll restrict it then to members of the law, so we know that it's original work that's coming in. Yeah. Already, a bunch of photos have been posted on the Review Away group, as well as the Live Audio Wrestling Facebook group.
Actually, let me change that. It doesn't have to refer, like, it doesn't have to include our faces, but it should refer to something either that we talk about on this program or
something
Live Audio
Wrestling.
Something
that ties back to the law in yeah. Review Away, yeah. And you'll be in contention. Daniel Power is running away with it right now. He has posted some fantastic pictures. Like, just laugh out loud funny. Brian Hillhouse has also posted some good photos. Ridiculous one with Sid having babies that are me and
very
Way.
Funny.
So, some great shit out there, guys. I am very much enjoying these photos. So, we'll let it go another week, and then we'll announce the winner next week on the show so everyone has a fair chance to hear about the contest, what the rules are, and then next week we will give out a prize to the best photoshopper out there.
Yeah.
So as we end off here, Way, busy, busy show today. We got to hear from Buff Bagwell. We reviewed the July 2nd, 2001 show. So I thought next week, this show did inspire me to want to watch the follow-up to the July 9th, 2001
Excellent.
Raw, featuring one of the greatest moments in WWE history on this show. So we're going to go watch that, see how they recover from Tacoma. Because watching this, I realized all these plans are about to be folded, and now we get to see the booking reaction to this terrible event.
Oh, I love it. I agree. I was hoping we'd keep along this thread of invasion.
Excellent. So next week, it will be the next week's edition of Raw is War from Atlanta, Georgia. Raw is War, and the invasion gets a bit of a kick in the ass. So, Way, as we finish off here, what tunes are you listening to? What do you want to end off?
Well, because we've already played Buff Daddy, why don't I go down further into my iPod, into Puff Daddy and the Family, and their hit from 1997, I'll Be Missing You, featuring Faith Evans and 112.
And we'll dedicate that song to Buff Bagwell's tenure in the WWE.
This right here to you goes out to everyone that has lost someone that they truly love. Check it out. Seems like yesterday we used to rock the show. I laced the track, you locked the flow. So far from hanging on the block for dough. Notorious, they got to know that life ain't always what it seemed to be. Words can't express what you mean to me. Even though you're gone, we still a team. Through your family, I'll fulfill your dreams. In the future, can't wait to see if you open up the gates for me. Reminisce sometime, the night they took my friend. Try to black it out, but it plays again. When it's real, feeling's hard to conceal. Can't imagine all the pain I feel. Give anything to hear half your breath. I know you're still living your life after death. Us while we pray for you. Every day we pray for you. Till the day we meet again. In my heart is where I keep you, friend. Memories give me the strength I need to proceed. Strength I need to believe. My thoughts big, I just can't define. Wish I could turn back the hands of time. Us in the six, shop for new clothes and kicks. You and me taking flicks, making hits. Stages they receive you on. Still can't believe you're gonna give anything to hear half your breath. I know you're still living your life after death.
passing. Today's the day that I get closer. Seeing you again. We miss you.